Okay, we're on the home stretch. Ready to cross the finish line. Chapter 9. From Canto 1. Starting with text 41. There are just two prayers remaining where Bhishma Dev, consider. These are the last two statements he makes before he gives up his body. He's looking at Krishna, glorifying Krishna to his heart's content. At the Rajasuya Yajna, performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira, there was the great assembly of all the elite men of the world, the royal and learned orders, and in that great assembly, Lord Sri Krishna was worshipped by one and all as the most exalted personality of Godhead. This happened during my presence, and I remembered the incident in order to keep my mind upon the Lord. So Prabhupada summarizes in the purport the incidents leading up to the Rajasuya Yajna. The Kurukshetra battle had been fought. And prior to the establishing Maharaj Yudhisthira as the emperor of the world, the plan was, or the custom was, the emperor, who is the king of so many other kings, would then invite others to come and pay tribute to his coronation, or challenge him to combat. So, in the four directions, the Pandavas were sent, Yudhisthira staying in Hastinapur, Bhima went east, Arjuna went north, Nakula and Sahadeva went west and south with their challenge horses. That was the system. The horse would enter into the royal place and they could honor the horse as the representative of the king and pay tribute to the emperor, or they could accept the challenge and do combat and either be victorious, or if defeated, be killed and be replaced by another king who would accept the emperor. Everyone accepted and paid tribute and received their invitation, please come and attend the Rajasuya Yajna. Krishna personally took the service of receiving all the guests, such an important service, hospitality. Receiving everyone, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did the same in Puri. Receiving everyone, making them feel welcome, making residential quarters for all these personalities. And then the Rajasuya Yajna was to begin. And in that Rajasuya Yajna, one of the protocols is for one in the assembly to be elected or honored, accepted as the most important personality in the whole assembly. So there's a lot of egos in such an assembly of great rishis and brahmanas and kshatriyas, but no one was positioning themselves above Krishna. Krishna was being recognized by everybody with one exception, His Grace Shishupal. And Yudhisthira called upon Bhishma to honor Krishna. So like he's doing here, he was no stops, all out, glorifying Krishna, Shishupal's lips were trembling like a serpent, hissing. Finally, he couldn't take any more, and he burst out, offending Krishna so badly. Bhima had his club ready to bash him, and Krishna held him back. No. Arjuna had his bow and arrows ready to go. The 100th time he offended Krishna, Shishupal was liberated. Rajasuya Yagya went on. And Bhishma derived great happiness in seeing the whole world honor Krishna. Now, the verse says that they honored him as the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada says specifically in the purport, Krishna was accepted as the greatest personality of the time, although he might not have been recognized as the supreme personality of Godhead. We've heard this description before, that even during Krishna's manifest presence, not everybody understood that he was the personality of Godhead. They understood him as a great personality. Prabhupada said, two handfuls of persons maybe understood Krishna's position. One handful is the Pandavas, and another is Bhishma Deva, and another is Kunti. But at least, you know, a limited number of persons. But the Rajasuya Yagya was specifically honoring Krishna as the most respected person in the world, because the persons in attendance were from all over the world, because he's the emperor of the world. So this is in the explanation or the purport. Prabhupada is explaining, it's not that you had to be at the Rajasuya Yagya in order to appreciate as Bhishma Deva was appreciating. Rather, it's an experience that he had that he's remembering, but one can also enter into the same appreciation by sound vibration, because the sound vibration of Krishna's name, form, qualities, pastimes, etc., it's not different than Krishna. Okay, so here's the last words of Grandfather Bhishma, at least last recorded in the Bhagavatam. Now I can meditate with full concentration upon that one Lord Sri Krishna now present before me, because now I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's hearts. Everyone's heart. Even in the hearts of the mental speculators. He is in everyone's heart. The sun may be perceived differently, but the sun is one. So now this is a participation question. What does this mean? I'm looking for volunteers to offer some explanations. That Bhishma Deva is saying, I have now transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart. What does this mean? Any volunteers? Now I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart. I don't see anybody's hands up. Should I just call on some people? Mm-hmm.
Everybody's looking down.
You want me to explain it? Well, at least now I have everybody's attention. I'll just continue as... Can anybody give the... metaphor that we've heard Prabhupada give about the sun is one, although the sun may be reflected on different pots of water, so it appears that there's many suns, but actually the sun is only one. You heard that one before? Can someone, using that metaphor, then explain, I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart, even in the hearts of the mental speculators. He is in everyone's heart. The sun may be perceived differently, but the sun is one. Oh, please. I just gave it away. Yes? Let's just start with Supersoul. Supersoul is manifested within the heart of every living being, like the sun is manifested as a reflection on the surface of different water pots. Water pot, water pot, water pot. Sun reflection, sun reflection, sun reflection. It looks like many suns. There's one sun. So the universality of life is, it's the same Krishna that's in the heart of every living being. So, duality is to see we're separate. And non-duality is to see that we have unity. So as the Supersoul is present in everyone's heart, there is this unity amongst all of us. In fact, the souls, although the souls are individual, the souls are from the Supreme Soul. So there is this unity. So although Supersouls are, the manifestation of Supersoul is unlimited, it's one Supersoul. So Bhishma Dev is stating that he's now realizing this fact. He's declaring it. Okay, so now, are there other possible explanations? That's right in the purport. An additional misconception of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart is that there are three features of the Absolute Truth, Paramatma being one of them, Brahman being another one of them, and Bhagavan being another one of them. So although there are these three features of the Absolute Truth, it's one Absolute Truth. The misconception of duality is to say, oh no, you can't have differences like that, because as soon as you have differences, then you have duality. But no, there's absolute relationship between Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. There are three features of the same absolute truth. They're not manifestations of duality. Then there's another misconception of duality that Prabhupada brings up in another part of the purport, and that is, he's already mentioned, Bhishma Dev has already mentioned, that the gopis, he's invoking the mercy of the gopis because the gopis have this position of practical equality or oneness with Shyam Sundar. Now the worshipable form, because he's already disclosed what he, the form of Krishna that he likes most is Parthasarathi. He's described it in several verses, with the whip in one hand, the reins in the other hand, skillfully moving the chariot of Arjuna through the various soldiers, protecting Arjuna and helping him become victorious in his combat. And the light glittering off of his dhoti at the time of sunset when he was fighting so intensely with Arjuna. So Parthasarathi. And the gopis, their Ishtadev, their supreme object of attraction, is Shyamasundar. So Prabhupada explains, there's some commentators that say these are actually two different people. And Prabhupada says, bogus, it's not two different people. It's two different features of the same personality in Godhead, but that's not to be understood in a matter of duality. It's the matter of the absolute truth showing himself in different features according to the disposition of love in the hearts of particular devotees. Bhishma Dev's appreciating the form of attraction of the gopis, he's fixed on Parthasarathi. And there's no duality in these diversities of form. So that's it for Bhishma Dev, at least as far as recorded by Vyas. Then the remaining verses are, his shutting down his external activity, even speaking about Krishna in the assembly. Thus Bhishma Dev merged himself in the super soul, Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with his mind, speech, sight, and actions, and thus he became silent and his breathing stopped. Oh, here's another question. What does this mean? Bhishma Dev merged himself in the super soul. Does it mean he's an impersonalist? No. What does it mean? He became one with super soul. What does it mean? Yeah. Yes. Nirvikalpa Samadhi, he merged himself into thinking of the Lord and his mind into remembering his different activities. So this is another kind of oneness. Prabhupada has chosen deliberately, I'm sure, to use the word merged, but not merged in the Sayuja, but in the complete absorption. Kevala Bhakti. This word Kevala is a word that the impersonalists like a lot. Kevala Advaita. Absolute monism. That's Shankaracharya's teachings. Kevala Advaita. And this is Kevala Bhakti. Absolute devotion. Nothing else. Complete absorption. Just like complete absorption. When doing devotional service, it's not like we're in the realm of duality, but we're having to do these two operations. Engage in prescribed duties and always think of Krishna. It's Krishna's indication in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Perform your prescribed duties and always think of me. I mean, the closest thing that we have service-wise is chanting japa. When we're chanting japa, we're not supposed to be multi-processing stuff. Reading the newspaper, thinking about what your day's activity is going to be. It's even not even reading, not even reading scripture, just one thing, the holy name. And by practice of chanting the holy name, it's practice to achieve this state. The technical term is nirvikalpa samadhi, or kevala bhakti. So he shut down all the external activity and just did this one activity, fixed his mind, absorbed his mind completely to exclusion even of serving, just shut down, withdrew his active senses, senses of perception, amalgamated them into the mind, Krishna. Prabhupada writes, the unique situation at Bhishma Dev's time of death can be attained even though Krishna may not be personally present, like in our case. His words of the Bhagavad Gita and those of Srimad Bhagavatam are identical with the Lord. They are sound incarnations of the Lord. So if we can fix, just like chanting and hearing, if we can fix our consciousness in that sound vibration, it's the same as Bhishma Dev's fixing his attention on Krishna, standing before him. Same. It's achievable. It's not okay for Bhishma Dev and has no relevance to us. And then how the people responded. Knowing that Bhishma Dev had merged, because he stopped breathing, he's gone. He's elsewhere. Knowing that Bhishma Dev had merged into the unlimited eternity of the Supreme Absolute, all present there became silent, like birds at the end of the day. Nice poetry, huh? Birds all day long. Where is food? Where is food? At the end of the day. Silent. Prabhupada in the purport describes this is the consequence. One can experience that complete satisfaction as a result of the urge, he calls it, the urge for spirituality in life. He uses the term Brahma Jigyasa. So, Jigyasu means inquisitive. Brahma Jigyasa, one is inquisitive about that which is eternal. So he's calling that the spiritual urge. And those that have the spiritual urge generally are divided into three categories: Gyanis, Yogis, and devotees. Not knowing about, not having shelter of the personality of Godhead, the jnanis and the yogis, you know, those that are trying to fix their attention on Paramatma, the yogis, their destination is the Brahmajyoti. He says it twice in the purport. But the devotee doesn't care for the Brahmajyoti. They want service to Krishna. So their focus is on Bhagavan. Now these are three features of the same absolute truth that we've already established, that beyond the conception, misconceptions of duality. But the devotees don't like this other position because there's no opportunity for service. They want service. They want a relationship with Krishna so that they can serve him. They don't like this other. Even if offered, no thanks. Well, you may have to stay here. Okay, that's okay. I want to serve. I want to serve Krishna. I want a relationship with Krishna. Bhishma Dev, as a pure devotee of the Lord, entered the spiritual realm in one of the Vaikuntha planets, where the Lord, in his eternal form as Partha Sarathi, predominates over the unconditioned living beings who are constantly engaged in the service of the Lord. So here it is confirmed. Did Bhishma Dev go back to the heavenly realm and resume his position as a Vasu? Bhishma Dev went back to Godhead in the Vaikuntha realm. And like, this is like really cool, like really special information. Krishna acts as a chariot driver of Arjuna even in Vaikuntha. How do you go? That's wonderful. He's Bhagavan, the all-opulent Lord, and all others recognize his opulence, and still Krishna is taking this position as subordinate, as the chariot driver of Arjuna. Wow. This is discussed in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that normally we think of in the residence of Vaikuntha, they're four-handed, just like Narayan is four-handed, and the only distinction is the mark of Srivatsa and the Kastuba gem, and otherwise everybody looks the same. But Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and here in this purport, the indication is that the personality of Godhead appears according to the devotion of the devotee. And we know what Bhishma Dev's devotion is, Partha Sarathi. So he appears as Partha Sarathi. Just like, you know, Ram, when he returned to the spiritual realm, he just then manifested four arms, and everybody else has got four arms except he's got the Kastuba gem and Srivatsa. No, he's Ram. And they're who they are. Not in material forms, but in spiritual form. Because that's the delight of their life. So that's a little inside information of Vaikuntha realm. The love and affection which bind the Lord and the devotee are exhibited in the case of Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev never forgot the Lord in his transcendental feature as the Partha Sarathi, and the Lord was present personally before Bhishma Dev while he was passing to the transcendental world. That is the highest perfection of life. Thereafter, both men and demigods sounded their drums of honor, and the honest royal order commenced demonstrations of honor and respect, and from the sky fell showers of flowers. It's over, he's gone, but they're honoring him in this way, respectively. Some beating on drums, some singing songs of praise, some showering flowers appropriate to their respective positions. Then Prabhupada makes a comment in the purport. He's been speaking about the form of the Lord and the form of the devotee, the swarup, the spiritual form of the pure devotee. Then he speaks about the body. So Bhishma Dev left behind a body. The body of Bhishma Dev lost its material effects due to being surcharged with spiritual realization, and thus the body was spiritualized. As when iron becomes red hot in contact with fire, the body of a fully self-realized soul is not therefore accepted as material. Special ceremonies are observed for such spiritual bodies. The normal situation is when someone dies, you must perform funeral. And there's a scriptural reason besides the ritual itself. If the soul, the tendency of the soul, like we were discussing yesterday, about how strong is fruitive attachment, fruitive tendency. Fruitive tendency is resting upon bodily identification. There are these two, I and mine. And mine is based upon I. What I am determines whatever conception I have of what I am determines mine. So the soul has been encaged in the body for so long that one is very attached to the body. I mean, we become attached to things in a really short time. You know, like you in Ramanujacharya's life, recently observing his appearance day. So some of his followers, Ramanujacharya's followers, were a little surprised because Ramanujacharya was so strict that he accepted as disciples this grihastha couple that were like really opulent. They dressed really opulently, they wore really opulent ornaments, and their features were elegant and beautiful. And so the followers of Ramanuja were asking, what? We were very confused. Can you explain how it is that you've accepted these attached, opulent householders as disciples? See, I want to show you something. I'll answer your question by giving you a demonstration. At night, when my sannyas disciples have taken rest, go into their place where they have taken rest and just move their garments from this place to that place, and this one's from that place to this place, and see what happens. These renounced sannyasis, when they got up in the morning, hey, where's my dhoti? Hey, where's my kurta? Hey, what's going on? They began quarreling because they were attached to their little bit of whatever it is that they had. Then he said, without making comment, go to the home of this couple in the dead of night and go and steal from their home when they're sleeping and watch what happens when they wake up in the morning. So the husband happened to be out of the home for some period of time when they snuck in the window and crept over into the room, and they began removing the expensive jewelry from the wife's body. She was awake. Then she turned to allow them to take the jewels from the other side of it. Oh, she's woken up and jumped out the window. But then they waited till the husband came home. She explained the whole thing, and he got on her case, saying, why don't you give them everything? They're so desperate. They're coming here to steal. We don't need these ordinances for anything. She said, well, that's why I turned over, so they could take from the other side too. But I guess they thought that they had woken me, and so they ran out the window, jumped out the window. I've failed. What should I do now? So the idea is, it's really easy to become attached. Even we're in a situation in such a short period of time. I mean, think about it. You know, the places where you stayed while visiting here in Vrindavan. If you go into your room and something that you put down over here is now over there, you might get aggravated. It's your roommate. You know, what have you? What are you doing? Not your stuff. It's my stuff. Anyway, you get the idea. Very quickly, we become attached to something that's just temporary. We're here for a little while, and then we're gone. So we're attached to the body, and then because of the misconception of I, misconception of mind. So because of that, when death comes, when the soul departs from the body, the Vedic system is, before, if the soul leaves the body during the daytime, before the sun sets, or if the soul leaves the body at night before the sun rises, the body is to be burned, so the soul can't continue to take shelter, try to take shelter of the dead body. In other cultures, they have a whole other system. They pump up the body with formaldehyde and dress it up and pretty it up so people can come and look at the corpse. And it goes on for days. No knowledge of the soul. It's all the sentimental stuff. Immediately the body is to be burned. But in the case of an elevated personality, it's that their body is fully spiritualized, like Bhishma Dev's. And so another procedure is followed, and that's placing the body in samadhi, packing the body in salt, and then sand, and then covering the body with flowers, and then earth. Because the soul is not attached to the body, the body has become fully spiritualized also by dint of self-realization and spiritual consciousness. O descendant of Bhrigu, Shonaka, after performing funeral rituals for the dead body of Bhishma Dev, Maharaj Yudhisthira momentarily was overtaken with grief. So his grief was not identifying Bhishma Dev with the body. His grief, transcendental grief, is missing the association of a great personality. So that's appropriate. Grieving like a worldly person grieves is inappropriate. But the feelings of separation from a great Vaishnava, we will no longer have the opportunity to associate with them. Those feelings are natural, spiritual. Day for them, and therefore he must have been feeling great separation. He was sorry for the separation of a great soul, and not for the material body, which Bhishma Dev relinquished. The funeral ceremony was a necessary duty, although Bhishma Dev was a liberated soul. Again, there's purposes in the funeral ceremony for a worldly person which are different from the purposes for a transcendentalist. We're almost done. All the great sages then glorified Lord Sri Krishna, who was present there, by confidential Vedic hymns. Then all of them returned to their respective hermitages, bearing always Lord Krishna within their hearts. Appropriate conclusion for this nice chapter. In the association of Krishna, these elevated souls naturally were feeling great affinity toward Krishna. He's the all-attractive personality of Godhead. So those thoughts of Krishna within their hearts And then the disclosure is that they are also in Krishna's heart. There's verses in the Bhagavatam where the Supreme Lord is directly describing when Durvas Muni goes to Lord Vishnu to get relief from Sudarshan Chakra. Lord Vishnu says specifically like that. It's a wonderful verse in the Bhagavatam. Because the devotees of the Lord have nothing in their hearts but me, look in my heart and there's nothing in my heart but them. They're completely attached to me and I'm completely attached to them. It's not a one-way, a loving relationship is not a one-way thing. We just serve Krishna and he's like a dull stone that there's nothing that comes back. Not like that. Krishna is very loving. As we are attached to him, he is attached to us. Or at least as, yeah. And in a case of a pure devotee, there's nothing in their hearts but Krishna. And in Krishna's heart, he's fully attached to them. For the ordinary living beings, the law of nature is there for all actions and reactions. But he is always anxious to put his devotees on the right path. The devotees, therefore, are under the direct care of the Lord. The Lord also voluntarily puts himself under the care of the devotees. Only. So it's different rules. Rules of the material energy and the rules of the spiritual energy. In both cases, we're servants. Those that are rebellious to Krishna, they're serving Krishna also. They're serving Krishna through the agency of his external energy. Like it or not, agree with it or not, accept it or not, profess it or not, they're the servants of his external energy. And those that are the devotees, they're directly under Krishna's care, and Krishna puts himself under their care. Isn't it? It's like the deity form of the Lord. Krishna accepts a form where he's under our care. Now, if we neglect the position of servant, then Krishna may leave. Just like the chanting of Krishna's holy name. Nama Prabhu may not be there, although the syllables may be there, Haridas Thakur says. If we're offensive in chanting. But for the devotee, Krishna's there. And he places himself in such a way he's under our care. That's Krishna. That's our loving master. Again and again, this message is there in the devotional teachings. It's bewildering to the non-devotee. And it's so attractive to the devotee. So the sages left. They carried Krishna in their hearts. Wherever their different respective destinations was. And the final verse of the chapter. No, final two verses. Thereafter Maharaj Yudhisthira at once went to his capital, Hastinapur. Accompanied by Lord Sri Krishna. And there he consoled his uncle and aunt Gandhari, who was an ascetic. So, the other funerals were done, Bhishma Dev has passed. He now understands, he's just prompted from within. That's Krishna within. I must take care of my great uncle, Dhritarashtra, although he tried to kill me in so many ways. Through the agency of Duryodhan, I must take care of him. He went to console them. Now, it doesn't describe the scene. The scene's a really intense scene. Gandhari becomes fiery. And in that scene, Gandhari curses Krishna. Anyway, Mahabharata. the disposition of Maharaj Yudhisthira is just to serve. It's not like, I'm the king, okay, let's have a big party. It's to serve. He wants to serve. After this, the great religious king Maharaj Yudhisthira executed the royal power in the kingdom strictly according to the codes and royal principles approved by his uncle and confirmed by Lord Sri Krishna. So this first canto has a number of places where the duties of a king and the disposition of a king are explained, because it's very important to have a proper ruler if you're going to have proper consciousness in the citizens in general. And this is Kali Yuga, we're not likely to have very many proper rulers. But at least the principles are laid out. So to whatever degree a ruler or person who's giving some kind of leadership to others in this age of Kali can understand these are principles to live by when you're taking responsibility and caring for others. And it also shows that Maharaj Yudhisthira, it wasn't just mechanical or polite that he inquired from Bhishma Dev and then, you know, didn't pay any attention to what he said. He just went about business as usual. He engaged himself according to the indications he had heard from Bhishma. He applied the teachings that he heard from Grandfather Bhishma. Prabhupada's way of saying this, Maharaj Yudhisthira was not a mere tax collector. He was always conscious of his duty as a king, with no less than that of a father or spiritual master. The king is to see to the welfare of the citizens from all angles of social, political, economic, and spiritual upliftment. The king must know that human life is meant for liberating the encaged soul from the bondage of material conditions, and therefore his duty is to see that the citizens are properly looked after to attain this highest stage of perfection. Like a father, like a spiritual master, the king looks upon his citizens as his family members, those who he takes charge of them in all respects. So when there's proper Brahmins, and there's proper Kshatriyas, and there's proper parents, there's so much protection and so much well-being for an individual in society. There's very little of that in the age of Kali. And so the shelter must be taken largely from the Bhagavatam itself and those that are living the life of the Bhagavatam. Those who take shelter of the Bhagavatam and those that are living the life of Bhagavatam find that protection, along with the Sankirtan of the Holy Name. These shelters give real protection. One can feel really protected if those shelters are taken. The Bhagavatam book, the person, Bhagavat, and the Holy Name. Then there's shelter. And those that are taking the position of caring for others need to understand these principles from all angles: social, political, economic, and spiritual upliftment. Prabhupada spoke about the political upliftment of society. He didn't run for mayor or governor or anything, or president. But he spoke about from a Brahminical position for upliftment of society, because he was spiritual master of the whole world. And he cared very deeply. Even little things. Did the devotees have warm clothing in the winter? Were they receiving sufficient in their meals and so forth? At the same time, appreciating their willingness to live very simply and even austerely. But very caring, Prabhupada's like very caring father. Not just in the spiritual side, in the everyday side of life. Extraordinary personality. Very fortunate to have his shelter. Okay, so any questions? We have about 20 minutes. Okay, go ahead. Making a statement or asking a question? You do the best you can. It's not anything, you know, question presented, we're not able to communicate everything. We're not superhumans. Even very simple communications can be very effective. Even just some few words. When Krishna returned to Dwarka, just his eyes, catching the eyes of his wives, and they were feeling satisfied. Just even visual can be very, very meaningful communication without so much everything being communicated. So it's the acting from the heart idea that we don't have to say everything. You can have very meaningful communication. Anything else? I have my hands on some things, but let's see what verbal ones. Yes. Yes.
Speaking about Krishna showing four arm form, I felt that, or I took it as that. Like my question is, if he was very much.
I can't follow what the question is. You're struggling with the question. I don't know what it is. Can you just say it simply without all this pause? Just what is it? What form did you see? You saw four arm form. Krishna can be on the chariot of Arjuna and have four arms. That is all the question.
He's Krishna. So you can see him as Vasudev Krishna, the son of Vasudev. And Vasudev Krishna is four-armed. Right? When Krishna appeared in the prison house of Kamsa, Vasudev. But Krishna can, you know, he's malleable, according to the affection of the devotees. Okay? Another one?
In relation to Maharaj, it's a fear that is inside when it's heard and when it's, the thought comes that you also spoke it in the Raghunath Padyatra, that when this time cycle changes and like...
When the wheel of what?
The wheel of the time changes.
When the wheel of time changes, we feel fear because we're attached.
No, it's in relation to like the spiritual authorities I have in my life, and like they may leave their physical presence.
They may what?
Leave their physical presence.
They may leave their physical presence. So they will. Yeah.
So the fear is that if I don't get spiritually qualified, then I won't have the
result. Okay, and then turn it around and use that as an emphasis.
Therefore, double, redouble, quadruple, become spiritually qualified. Hurry up. Become, let it be an impetus rather than, you know, a drain. Follow? Okay. Of the five subject matters discussed in Bhagavad Gita, I find it difficult to understand time. How is time eternal? There's a whole article, just looking at it last night, there's an article that Mathuresh wrote in Back to Godhead on time. Time is a very elusive subject. It's a fascinating subject. It's not an easily understood subject. I recommend whoever wrote this, you look at the Back to Godhead magazine and read the article that Mathuresh wrote. It's from the ladies' side. So, it's really comprehensive. He's a very good writer. He did a lot of research. And you know, just to say in a capsule form something that he spent probably months preparing to write a nice article. Just read the article. If you have questions, you can ask the question again. Does time exist in the spiritual world? Yes, but not time as we know it. It's eternal time, not past, present, and future kind of time. And what's that like? We will not be able to understand it from our present position because we can only relate to time in terms of past, present, future. Out of the three energies of Krishna, internal, external, marginal, where is time placed? In his internal potency, time is eternal, and in his external potency, time is past, present, future. Manifests itself differently according to the realm that one is in. It's not an easy snap subject. It's something that requires a lot of contemplation. Can it be explained why Bhishma Dev was lying on the bed of arrows? He was lying on the bed of arrows because normally a person would have died with all those arrows in his body. But Bhishma Dev didn't. Bhishma Dev's life was being sustained because he didn't have to give up his body until he chose to give up his body. And so he was lying on a bed of arrows. Please explain what is the chastity of a woman which Queen Kunti possessed. Is it a natural quality? If it is not present, then what is the way of cultivating? It's a natural quality. It's both a spiritual and a psychological quality, meaning, you know, body specific. Men can be shy also. It's not, you know, shy is not outwardly exhibiting so many things, emotions and talkativeness, and just, you know, holding in the internal position rather than externally exhibiting. Just like Gadadhar Pandit was very gentle and peaceful and calm. And it, you know, he was that's not something spiritual, it's material, it's something spiritual. So a way for a woman to cultivate the quality of shyness is hearing about and appreciating and remembering and following the example of those who have that quality. There's some personalities that have that quality and some that don't. Like Rukmini is an ideal personality type. That she was very submissive to Krishna. And so all of her characteristics and qualities were like that. Or within the Vedic literature, there are particularly well-known individuals who are very shy and chaste, Gandhari is one. Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, being very chaste to Narayan. And so find those personalities within scriptures and meditate upon them, speak about them, remember them, follow their example. There are temporary attachments. Due to these attachments, there are sufferings. As already heard, that connection to Guru and Krishna can detach us from these material attachments. So in that mentality, trying to just pray to get connection with Guru and Krishna, which sometimes is mechanical, and sometimes with feelings, is it appropriate? Yes. Explain the way of getting it deeper and with genuine feelings. Well, it's a very important question, and it's hard to answer such an important question in a short time. It's certainly necessary. Very common, my experience is, very common is for devotees to accept the path of Krishna consciousness within the mind, but not so deeply. And so when circumstance changes, that acceptance of Krishna consciousness within the mind undergoes some fluctuations. Sometimes it even breaks, or it just like gets pushed to the side for some time, rather than accepting Krishna consciousness very deeply. So how to accept Krishna consciousness very deeply, or in this particular question, offer prayers to Guru and Krishna in a very genuine way, consistently. It's a matter of being in a relationship as opposed to being in your mind. In a relationship, there's give and take. There's love and trust. And that's the genuine thing. And that's something that you do from your heart, not from your mind. And Krishna consciousness is from the heart. We engage the mind, but it's from the heart. And the question of how to deepen this, it's the same. I'll just refer to the same statement that I made twice already, and that is, when the relationship with one's, those that are guiding one in spiritual life, is very strong, one makes very swift advancement. And without that strong relationship, advancement is not the same. It's negligible or minimal, but it's not significant and dramatic. So it does require making a distinction between my mind and the genuine feelings of the soul. To be in a relationship where there's, it's truly on the spiritual platform. It's not conditional. It's not how I feel today. It's from the soul. It's very not dependent upon, unconditional. Not dependent upon any material circumstance. Where, what, how, when, why, doesn't depend on any of those things. It's just, it's a relationship. Soul to soul. And that's what Krishna consciousness is. The medium of awakening, that is our devotional service. A core part of our devotional service is chanting the holy name. When we chant the holy name, the chanting, if you want to deepen the capacity to have a genuine spiritual relationship with your spiritual master and Krishna, start with your bead bag. Chant the holy name with great feeling, just like Prabhupada said, like a child calling out for their mother. We know what that blood-curdling sound is like. It's, and there isn't anything or anyone else that can pacify a child except the arms of their mother. It's not like some other mother can come along and the child is okay. They got to have their mother. And as soon as they have their mother, they're calm. Just like that. So that love, Rupa Goswami teaches, is exclusive. I want Krishna's shelter. I don't want something else. I don't want na janam, na danam, na sundrim, kavitam, ba jagadishakam. Bhavatad bhakti rahaitu kitwi. So strive for that. Try to enter into that genuine aspiration and feeling. And associate with those that have it. learn from them. It's 3 minutes to blast off. I'm gonna have to go after this. This is it. No. I'm gonna have to go. My attention very much goes to how others are chanting. I feel that I judge other devotees' sadhana by external behavior on the basis of my mental things. I feel envy, sometimes pride. Well, you know, I think I addressed that to some. You go to what's genuine. Go to, you know, take that stuff. And if you know what it is, it's just rubbish. Go to the holy name. Go to a very personal and meaningful relationship with your spiritual master and those that are guiding you in spiritual life. Go there instead. All this other external mind-boggling stuff, it's just such a drain, it's such a disturbance. Just dismiss it. It's that simple. You decide that you want to dismiss it, you just dismiss it. We made a big mistake. We came to the material world thinking, I want to enjoy. And it was a bad bargain. It wasn't what we thought it would be. We have to pay our dues for that mistake. So that's these distractions of these things mentioned here. That's just part of the price we have to pay. Okay, I accept that I have to pay this price. But let me not let my mind not budge one inch from the lotus feet of Krishna. This is Lord Brahma's prayer. After offending Krishna, I accept. I'm going to have some reaction. I'll let the reaction come. Whatever my misdeeds are, there's something coming my way. Let my mind not budge one inch from the lotus feet of Krishna. I want this relationship with Krishna. Whatever else happens. Okay, I want this relationship with Krishna. And the medium of that relationship with Krishna is through relationship with my spiritual master. I want that. And just then these other things, I'm just paying my dues for so many stupid mistakes. Starting with coming here to the begin with, trying to be an enjoyer, controller. From the heart, let me just take up this position of being the humble servant. Call out the holy name with genuine feeling. Take hold of the lotus feet of my spiritual master as my life and soul. To my last breath, just like Bhishma, let Krishna remain fixed in my mind. And there are many different ways, like Bhishma, many different ways that we may like to think of Krishna. Let them be in authentic ways, following in the footsteps of perfected souls. This is our life in Krishna consciousness. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come here and spend time with you in Vrindavan. And I'm going to Mayapur. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.